Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me for another Friday night's edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hunt, your host. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. The shutdown has been the topic of conversation across the country this week, so we thought we'd cover the topic 5-4-3-2-1 shutdown. In researching for this show, we came across an article that we thought completely, absolutely summed up this shutdown. So I'm going to read it to you. And this was found on themissourian.com, and it was dated October 16th. And it goes like this. It says, we are all stronger when we work together to build our community, state, and nation. Our representative government functions well when we engage in healthy debate so that the best path forward emerges from the marketplace of ideas. The federal shutdown, unfortunately, was a failure of American values. It was a great result of behavior that is not only immature, divisive, and destructive, but also undemocratic. The Tea Party Republicans, not having a majority of votes, wanted to extend their power by holding the American people and our economy as hostage as a bargaining chip. They didn't seem to care how much collateral damage was wrought in their quest to get their way. They would have rather seen the country's economy falter than see Obamacare enacted and 25 million people receive health care coverage. They were counting on the President and the Senate to buckle to their demands because the latter cared more about the American people and our economy. The behavior divides and weakens our country. The rest of the Republican Party, including Representative Steve Daines, has unfortunately aided and abetted the Tea Party. If they want their way, I call upon them to use legitimate means to obtain it. The Constitution requires that they win elections so they have a majority of the votes in our various branches of government. I call upon Daines and all Republicans to demonstrate the best American values and release hostage the American people, our economy, and reopen the federal government. I apologize, y'all. My contacts are not working well. So this reminded me of something I saw this week, and this was from, I believe, the night of the – I'm sorry, I have to look at my notes on this. This was on the floor, the House floor, when one of the Democratic congressmen wanted to question the rules on who had the authority to reopen or call who has the right to call an end to the shutdown. So let's listen to this congressman asking the House Speaker to please explain the rules.
What purpose does the gentleman from Maryland rise?
Mr. Speaker, pursuant to Clause 4 of Rule 22, I move that the House take from the Speaker's table the Senate amendment to the House Joint Resolution 59, recede from its amendment, and concur in the Senate amendment to open the government now.
Under Section 2 of House Resolution 368, that motion may be offered only by the Majority Leader or his designee.
Parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Speaker.
Gentleman may state his parliamentary inquiry.
The standing rule of the House is Rule 22, Clause 4. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And the standing rule of the House reads, Mr. Speaker, when the stage of disagreement has been reached on a bill or a resolution with House or Senate amendments, a motion to dispose of any amendment shall be privileged. Mr. Speaker, my question is this parliamentary status of the bill, does it meet the requirements of 22-4?
The House has altered that operation of that standing rule.
So I just want to understand, Mr. Speaker, this standing rule of the House, which I have here, has been altered by the House. Is that what the Speaker's saying?
The House adopted a resolution altering.
Parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Speaker, when was that alteration made?
House Resolution 368.
House Resolution 368, Mr. Speaker, just parliamentary inquiry. I want to make sure I have the right one. I have in my hand H-Res 368, October 1st, resolved, and Section 2 of that says any motion pursuant to Clause 4 of Rule 22 relating to the House joint resolution may be offered only by the majority leader or his designee. Is that what you're referring to, Mr. Speaker?
That is the resolution.
So, Mr. Speaker, just so I understand the situation, parliamentary inquiry, H-Res 368 change the standing rules of the House to take away from any member of the House the privilege of calling up the Senate bill to immediately reopen the government. Is that right? It did change the operation of the standing rule. Right. So just parliamentary inquiry, a privileged motion, Mr. Speaker, would have allowed any member of this House, Republican or Democrat, to call up the Senate bill to open the government. Is that right?
The chair did not give an advisory opinion on that.
But, Mr. Speaker, a privileged resolution, as cited in Rule 22.4, the standing rules of the House, would allow any member of the House to offer that resolution. Is that right?
The chair will not give an advisory opinion.
Well, Mr. Speaker, parliamentary inquiry, I think you just, as I understood, said that that was changed so that it no longer would be a privileged motion for any member, but it would be exclusively the right of the Republican leader or his designee. Am I right about that?
The House will follow House Resolution 368.
Right. And just again, Mr. Speaker, I want to be absolutely clear that HRES 368 changed the standing rules of the House so that only the Republican leader or his designee could call to open
the
government.
The gentleman will state his parliamentary inquiry.
Parliamentary inquiry. Parliamentary inquiry. Is the majority leader or his designee? I would ask my colleagues whether the majority leader or his designee is on the floor of the House today.
The gentleman will address
parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Speaker.
The chair is prepared to entertain 1 minute.
This rule.
The gentleman have a parliamentary inquiry.
The chair has amended my parliamentary inquiry, and this will be my last one. I just want to understand, Mr. Speaker. The Rules Committee, under the rules of the House, changed the standing rules of the House to take away the right of any member to move to vote to open the government and gave that right exclusively to the Republican leader. Is that right?
The House adopted that resolution.
The chair
is now prepared to entertain 1 minute.
I make my motion, Mr. Speaker. Sure. I renew my motion that under the regular standing rules of the House, Clause 4, Rule 22, that the House take up the Senate amendments and open the government now.
Under Section 2 of House Resolution 368, that motion may be offered only by the majority leader or his designee.
And this, no, the chair, Mr. Speaker, why were the rules rigged to keep the government shut down?
The general will suspend.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think
the chair will now entertain.
Democracy has been suspended.
The gentleman will suspend.
Okay, y'all. That was Representative Chris Van Hollen, a Democrat from Maryland, addressing the speaker about the change that had been made October 1st, where prior to that change, anyone had the right to call an end to the shutdown. However, when they made that change, only Eric Cantor or his designee was going to be able to call an end to the shutdown. And so I just find all of that very suspect, you know, about the goings-ons of this shutdown and some of the things that occurred, because the American people were very clear in their dissatisfaction for the shutdown over these last 16 days. And so I have some guests with me tonight, and they're going to help me sort it all out. But I just found the shutdown. I've never been a big history buff, but I absolutely found this week to be, I mean, the shutdown to be very interesting and something in history that we all could learn a lot from. Y'all, tonight my guests are Carrie Ann Light. She's a talk show host here on Blog Talk Radio. We also have Mr. Carl Mitchell. He's a civil rights activist. And we also have the military represented tonight, y'all. Major Christopher Bonds is back in the building. Good evening, everyone. Welcome, Center Stage.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Very good to be here.
Thank you. I've got an echo coming from you, it sounds like, Carrie Ann.
Is that better?
That's better. So y'all heard my intro, and y'all just heard the tape from the House floor several nights ago. What are y'all's, and I'm still getting an echo from somebody, what are you all's thoughts on the shutdown? I mean, I'm still getting an echo from somebody.
I don't know who it's coming from.
Are you hearing me pretty well, Karen? Karen?
I can hear you. Christopher, is that you?
I can hear you as well.
Can you hear me okay? Is that echo for me?
Okay, no, it completely stopped, so that's good. So you all saw what happened over the 16 days of the shutdown. You know, each of you, give me your thoughts as to what you all saw and observed during the 16 days of the shutdown. Carrie Ann, we'll start with you.
All right. You know, I was really appalled by it. I feel like it...
Echo is you, Carrie Ann.
So all of a sudden, don't die.
Is it? I'm on my phone. I wonder if I should call back.
Yeah.
Are you on the computer as well?
Nope. Mm-mm.
Okay, dial back in. I think it's you somehow. I think it's coming from you. Hang up and dial us back. We'll move on to Christopher. What did you observe during the shutdown for the 16 days?
There was a lot of, I think, just chaos and concern by individuals that were affected in terms of that actually work for the government. Civilian employees that I know, contractors that I know, and it was the uncertainty. And the bottom line is that I think the biggest concern on most of the people that I spoke with was no paycheck as of October the 1st. And why that was occurring, and they tried to parallel that with why the House and the Senate was still receiving a paycheck and they were not.
Wait. I'm sorry. I just caught what you just said. On October 1st, some people didn't get a check?
That's absolutely correct. The furlough meant that at that time there were over 800,000 federal employees, that's including the contractors, that did not receive a check, period. So when you're furloughed, it's basically involuntary leave. So they basically send you home, and until it's resolved, you don't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
I saw October, the shutdown started what day? The shutdown started October 1st. So if you were going to be paid on October 1st, shouldn't your check have already been in the mail?
No, because actually as of September 30th at midnight, that's when the shutdown occurred.
Well, you all know that it takes longer to get paperwork together than 24 hours, so that almost seems like this was in the making.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've never done HR, I've never done payroll, but I would have to think if you got 800,000 plus people that you got to pay a payroll to, you can't do it in 24 hours. So it seems like if the checks didn't go out, it was probably already in the making. Does that make sense to anybody but me?
They probably have some kind of direct deposit.
Oh. So you think they stopped it?
Well,
I think that... regardless of whether or not the pay stopped from, say, the 1st through the 15th, or maybe they're a pay period behind, as a lot of places are, either way, those 2 weeks or weeks are not going to get paid.
And you have to keep in mind, when you say stop payment, what that actually, and that is correct, but what it translates into is funding. They stopped the physical money or physical electronic transfer of money as
mm-hmm.
of midnight. On the 30th.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Carrie Ann, back to you. What did you observe during this shutdown?
I just really felt like the people that we sent to the Hill, it was a big quagmire. And I saw a lot of brinksmanship was the word that I've heard a lot this week that I felt really described it well. I think that the tactic, and for me, it doesn't matter who started it or who did what, but, trying to negotiate when you have these threats, nobody does well in that situation. And I feel like our lawmakers should not be having these discussions and working through these types of laws when they're using, as you said in your these gigantic, potentially devastating situations, either you do this or we're shutting it down.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is a lack of compromise, and it is, to me, in a violation of their promise to serve us in Congress.
I still hear an echo. I still hear an echo, Carrie Ann. Are you in the same room with your computer?
Well, I am, but the show is not on. Do you think that it's causing that, even though it's just on?
That's the only option. Because the echo is still coming. When we hear you, it's like a feedback. Can you move to another
that's
room?
So weird. Well, I shut my computer off. Is that better?
Let's see. I didn't hear it
sounds
the last.
I don't hear any echo.
Hey, there it goes. Okay. It was a computer. Okay. So, Carl Mitchell.
Go
ahead.
Oh, well, what I observed, Carrie, was an extreme level of obstruction. So, you know, we all observed that there was a few mortgages that was going to be approved, that were approved, a few mortgages, rather. We had small business loans that was put on hold. Of course, we had some job hires that were delayed. We had consumer spending, of course, fell severely. And we had increased borrowing costs. And we had international standing that was damaged during this construction. That's what I observed during that, you know, period of time. And so, but
no, this is what I came up with, y'all. And this is what I think. And I think this particular shutdown showed us that all of these guys shouldn't do any more than two terms. Because it seemed like we had a group of politicians that really have gotten comfortable in their positions, and they think they're God. And they play God over our lives for 16 days. And I think that there should be term limits now. I absolutely think that we should move to make certain that no one gets any more than two terms, because I think we actually, as the people, have to take our power back and say, listen, you work for us, and don't you dare forget it. And I think, I mean, did any of you all feel that during the 16 days that they absolutely forgot who they were working for?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, I feel that strongly that
very much.
I, like a military service member, I always try to present and perform due diligence as a public or civil servant for the people. I think a lot of congressmen and senators have gotten to the point where they have forgotten that they're supposed to be and they're hired to be public and civil servants. And a lot of what has transpired, they have even gone as far as, in terms of getting beyond that, by changing or ratifying different things that are in the Constitution to benefit them, not the people, which is the reason during the shutdown – the 27th Amendment, they made sure that if there's ever any type of shutdown or government funding problem, there's always magically money set aside for them, but not for everybody else who's on the government payroll.
Well, you know, it would be like me telling my husband, you know, say the night before three or four prearranged bills are going to come through electronically, say. And then me telling him that night, look, you either do what I want or I'm going to take all the money and we're not going to pay any of our bills. I mean, you cannot, you know, they're supposed to pay the bills. They're supposed to do the budget. And I don't feel like it doesn't matter what party you're in or who you're at. It was very clear that the gist of our country wanted them to avoid the shutdown. So to me, at the end of the day, when you had the Democrats versus the Republicans and so forth, they were just up there doing their thing, and they weren't listening to all of the people in the country that were from all parties saying, hey, don't let this happen. Mm-hmm. But they did.
They
did let it.
Carl Mitchell, do you think this showed us that we need to do time limits on our politicians we send to Washington?
Yes, I agree with a fellow named, I'm looking for the organist's DNA, named Kevin Airtyre. He is a Republican here in Texas, Tyler. But one thing, Kevin, he must be a moderate because he did say some things that was very, I think, correct. I'll say about 6 months ago, if I had the article, he was talking about he was for placing term limits on government officials, like in Texas, like the governorship and, and the Comptroller of Public Accounts and what's his attorney general, this type of stuff, because people like Rick Perry and them, longstanding, they, you know, their views are kind of old and wore out, you know, and too Southern and conservative. And so we're stuck with that when there's no term limits on their governmentship. I definitely agree that we do need term limits. Because we have people.
We need people to vote. I mean, people. I talk to so many people, especially people that are concerned. Like, we are patriots, they claim, and these people don't vote. And they try to tell you, it doesn't matter what I say, they try to tell me that, well, even if we did vote, the voting is rigged. I can only say again and again, and it doesn't matter to me what the position is, I feel like our founding fathers left us an instruction manual, I like to call it, and if we followed it and we were not apathetic and all of us did get in there and we did educate ourselves on what the bills are that are going through the Hill, if we educated ourselves on who's running for these positions from local to national, and then we actually went and voted, it would be a very different place, but it's not. People are just seeing what's happening and seeing what's going down and then saying, I don't like it, as opposed to getting involved and being proactive and making a difference. I hear people say, oh, emails and calls don't do any good. Oh, yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
do. That is the power of the people. And so even if there were term limits, it would be helpful when there's, you know, a congressman that's not doing their job. But at the same time, why are we not out? Look, you know, if we, as Texans say, for example, we're not happy with our representatives, then we need to be out there finding new candidates that we do approve of and then follow it all the way through to the end when they get elected. And if they don't, keep trying. It's going to be a never-ending battle, and it's one that we should always be taking and teaching our children to do, but unfortunately, we don't. As a country, I think there's an average turnout rate for elections. It doesn't really matter, you know, if it's local or national, 30% or less.
See, this is what I think. I think, first of all, they're called representatives for a reason. They're called representatives. Uh-huh. They're supposed to be our mouthpiece in Washington. And I think they went there and they voted as they did, and they did the things that they did over this 16 days, says that they're no longer mouthpieces for the people. So I say anybody who didn't just get elected needs to go. I pretty much say when you see the ticket this time, you know, and these midterm elections, and they're saying incumbents, if they didn't just go up there, they need to come down. I mean, would y'all agree with me on that? It's just time for a change.
I agree.
The midterm election is going to be just as important as the 2016 elections, for that concern, because we're going to have to vote the majority of the GOP constituents out of office. It's not going to have an adverse impact on the American economy and our American way of life. I was talking about the guy Kevin Airtap earlier. The Republican Party is known to fight amongst themselves or be divided amongst themselves. Airtap, reading why he was speaking about the term limits is because Rick Perry sent back the, you know, during the time Obama first got in office, you know, they had the bailout package. Well, of course, Rick Perry hated Obama so bad that he sent the package back. You know, and Airtap said we need the money, so he had to fight for the bailout money. And so he didn't like that and whatnot. And so he's for the term limits thing, that's a good thing. So I guess some of the Republicans who are moderates, you know, we can have a better chance of dealing with them, with the Democrats. I mean, we are those people like Ted Cruz and Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin and what's his name, Jim DeMint, and these type of people, and Hearst Actions. We don't have no way with those type of people. We don't have no type of sway with them. They're going to have to be just, I don't know, we're going to be able to, we got to get rid of their caucus.
Well, you know, the first time I ever voted was for Ronald Reagan on his second term. The first term, I turned 18 about 6 days after the vote. And for me, you know, being just about 50 and having a pretty good run of years, you know, being involved, I don't feel like the Republicans of our time right now are the same as in those times. And same with Democrats. I think that, you know, there's so much muddiness in all of it. To me, I just want to hear these representatives who are going there to serve us, I want to hear them doing that. You know, when we tell them, hey, we don't want the shutdown. I mean, shoot, in Texas alone, look how big we are. You know, mm-hmm. if all of our congressmen were up there on that hill these past few weeks talking about what the gist of the population wanted, I think it would have been different. But that's what they got up there, and they just did their own thing. And they all dug their feet in, and it was hardcore gridlock. You know, it's disgusting what they did. And I don't think that they – I thought President Obama should have – if he was going to use an executive order, I thought, well, now would be a good time and just tell all these congressmen and senators they're not getting paid. I would have loved to seen them not get paid until work it out. And they still haven't worked it out because we still have a debt ceiling and funding problem in our country. So it's just going to come right back in January and February.
That's true. And the some of what was said, I do agree. Voting is the primary tool and weapon. But the second one is going to have to be pursuing and advocating for term limits. And the reason is that whether you're a Democrat or Republican, once you're in Congress or the Senate for more than two terms, you become very powerful and very well connected and funded. So if you think that people, I think, and the longer that goes on, the less likely it is that either side is going to do what is in the best interest of their constituents. So if they're going to serve two terms in the Senate and no more than two or three terms in the House, and then it would be cut off, that would be fine, because I know in 1994 they had something, I believe it was called the House Republican Contract with America, and that was an initiative to push for term limits. But, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats, they helped to sweep that under the rug, and people kind of bought into it. They backed down. And so Congress basically, I don't really think it's realistic that they're going to listen to the people until there are things like specific things dealing with the term limits on the table, because it's just too many powerful, wealthy, well-connected lobbying groups once those individuals are in there for too long. And actually, it was never designed for that. It was designed for a term or two, somebody else to come in and provide representation. So we definitely going to have to vote them out, but we're also going to have to revisit term limits.
Oh, I totally agree. Besides, when you take the term limits out, chances of reducing these huge, you know, lobbyists that are supporting these candidates, you know, they're putting all their money into these guys so that they'll do what they want.
Yes.
If you've got a term limit, then that really takes the power out of your buck. I mean, it you know, there's not even enough time. There is if they're really on it, but there's barely enough time for them to actually get done what they quote-unquote promised to do to these large financial backers. So that in itself is another really good reason. And I agree. I totally agree that there should be term limits. I just
the presidential seat is term limited.
Exactly. The president can only do two terms.
Two terms, but Congress is unlimited. There's people who've been in Congress for 57 years.
In the Texas governorship, I mean, you know, like we have Greg Abbott trying to run for Texas governor. They told me he had already $25 million. In campaign funding, because during his time as the attorney general, he has been associated with big businesses in Texas, and so he has a lot of backing because he's been there a long time. And Cucinelli, or wherever they want Cucinelli, doesn't have a chance. You know, he has less than $1 million, maybe.
Yes, and that's the key.
We had
the
other lady.
What's
her name? Who's running? She did the filibuster, the abortion. I've been calling her name all week, but I'm kind of forgetting.
Wendy Davis.
Wendy Davis. Wendy Davis is our girl. You know, she's our candidate. She has, you know, a little over $1 million right now, but she's the Texas pick who we need as the next governor of Texas.
You know, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the topic 5-4-3-2-1. We're talking about the shutdown that basically held this country hostage and our economy hostage for 16 days while, you know, thousands and thousands of federal employees were wondering if they were going to get a paycheck. I mean, all types of monuments and memorials and national parks were closed, and you know, everybody was wondering what the heck is going on and who the heck did we send to Washington that would make so many poor decisions on behalf, they say, of us. But it really is clear that they were not working for us during that 16-day shutdown. If you'd like to weigh in on tonight's topic, dial us up at 347-850-8390 and then press 1. Again, tonight we're talking about the topic 5-4-3-2-1 shutdown. We're talking about the 16 days that our government held us hostage while they played basically a game of chess, you know, and tag and whodunit and the whole nine yards with our economy, federal employees' paychecks. It was just horrible. So if you feel like we do, you want to chime in, you know, you want to rant about it, call us up tonight again at 347-850-8390. Listen, y'all, I found something in researching for this show that blew me away. In Oregon, some people were smart enough that were furloughed to go and apply for unemployment. So they got state benefits, state unemployment benefits, plus now, of course, they're going to be back paid for being furloughed. And so someone asked, should they have to pay the money back to the state, you know, for their unemployment benefits? And guess what? The answer is no.
No. It's
you know,
not illegal. And they were involuntarily laid off.
Yeah.
So even though, and it does not calculate over the fact that you may be retroactively paid, so it's not. And putting it into context, but those same individuals were unaware of when the appropriations and when the budget would be passed, so they had to do what they had to do because
absolutely,
as of the first, the check stops.
Well, I'm so sorry for everybody that didn't think of it. I mean, I probably, and I must admit, unless someone tapped me on the shoulder and told me, I probably wouldn't have thought, I'm working but I'm furloughed, let me go and apply for unemployment. I probably wouldn't have thought of that. Because, you know, first of all, who thinks it's going to last any more than a couple of days?
Sure, sure.
Right. Yeah, son is stationed in England, and I was freaking out thinking, okay, well, so what's going to happen to my son if they're not getting paychecks if we get to that point, which is about to happen. And, you know, he's on the other side of the ocean. You know, that's just one thing. You know, I was hearing the talking heads discussing how much has already cost us. And, I mean, it's in the billions, just all of the different fallout that have come from it. And
is he a serviceman? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, he's in the Air Force.
So wasn't it an issue too with the benefits being paid out to the families of the fallen soldiers as well? It was going to be.
They passed a piecemeal on that one. So there was several little tiny things that they passed over the past couple of weeks to fund just one thing like opening the parks and funding for the fallen families of the fallen. So there were a few things that they did, but Obama was making it pretty clear that he didn't want to just keep doing that. But I just feel like, you know, the deal for the resolution was to deal with the budget. And it was insane for them to take something that has already been voted by the people. Again, I mean, it was voted by the people. Like, that's what the choice was. So it was pretty clear, and they wanted to, you know, directly tie that in to a you know, say, hey, we're not going to do our jobs because we want this. We want it so bad. That's it, period. So you either give us what we want or we're going to shut it down. And for whatever reason, it was a game of chicken. And I think it's, you know, very disgusting that the worst part, too, y'all, in my opinion, it's not just the money fallout, but what about our trust deficit with this world? I mean, what are they thinking about us?
Well,
Go ahead, Christopher.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Someone posted something about that. They said the saga in Washington is teaching America's creditors to lessen our creditors a lesson that the U.S. politicians are ready to fight each other at the expense of debt holders' interests, and the U.S. Treasury bonds are no longer will be a safe investment. So they did a lot in the 16 days to hurt us, you know,
yeah.
In many ways that we'll be seeing the ripples for a long time to come.
Well, that is true, but on the same side of that, I think a lot of people believe that in terms of just the overall budget and the effect that it has with the shutdown in terms of what our creditors think, some of those same creditors were still sitting at the table even during the shutdown. Case in point, September 30th, they actually, Congress and the Senate approved, now this is hours before the shutdown, 94 mm-hmm. contracts with the Department of Defense to a tune of $5 billion the night before the government shutdown. Also, they also passed a resolution that was going to pay for, in Utah, and you can Google it, $2 billion for a NSA spy center. So what I'm trying to say is that it really had very little to do with the budget because fiscally they could have passed it. It was what everybody has been talking about in terms of a quorum group of entitled congressmen and senators that wanted – and because when it all boils down, what they were actually trying to do is carve out parts of the budget for their state or their constituents. That's what it was about. It wasn't about Obamacare because they walked away with, okay, I got the $2 billion I needed for my state. I got this, I got that. That's what that was about. It wasn't about, I guess, fiscally making sure that the budget was comprehensive and together and that they could pay the debt. That was never an issue. This is about this amount of money has been allotted, but I want more. And if I don't get what I want, then I'm going to be a cog in the wheel, and we're going to shut the government down.
You know, I wish I thought it was just about that. I think it's so much bigger about a dry run, and I can't specifically say what I think the dry run was for, but I really think it's really, you know, and I'm going to sound like a conspiracy theorist, y'all, and that's okay, call me one, but I think this is so much the New World Order lining itself up, and I think that along with the EPT cards, I don't know, call me crazy, but I don't think the EPT system going down in the middle of this shutdown was just a coincidence. I don't believe that. I mean, does anybody else besides me think that there was something weird about the EPT system going down in the middle of the shutdown?
Well, you know, that goes along with, the conspiracy against the average American person, you know, the people who are on subsidiaries or whatever and on food stamp programs. Of course, you know, that's our strike. You know, they're always reaching out to try to harm, the middle class and lower class Americans. So that's another tactic. They did that because they don't like Obama, and they figured, you know, you all voted for Obama, so we're going to do all we can to harm all the income that you have coming in. So that's where I feel about
well,
it.
Well, you're right, and they shut whole federal and in some cases state, but mainly federal facilities down. But not one federal prison was shut down or defunded.
No.
16 days.
Don't mess with the prison industrial complex, I
not
guess.
Not one. They continue to operate normally.
Well, that's a bad thing.
Then we had that discussion. So there's, but I think that you're right. It's a dry run for how they're going to be able, and it's the truth, how they're going to be able to control things. Because if they shut it off, what are you going to do?
There's a lot of that conspiracy thing going, and rightfully so. But again, I really feel like it's a matter of showing up. I mean, if we want to make a change, then we've got to show up. And you know what else? We can't just show up. We have to show up what I call shovel ready. Because, you know, you could get five people show up and they're all, you know, into it. They're there and they're ready. They're not actually ready to go to work because they're missing their tools or they're missing their resistance shoes, you know, all the stuff that they need to where they can actually get to work. So they're still not helpful even though they've shown up because they're not actually ready to go to work. And that's kind of like a metaphor. I just really believe that if we're going to make a difference in anything, we have to get involved.
And to piggyback on that, and we're going to go to the phone lines in a second, I agree with Carrie Ann in this. Don't make any one person a sitting duck. I think if it's time for people to get up and do something, everybody's got to get up and do something at the same time. Don't let one person put their neck chopping block. If it's time to a government that's not doing right by its people, then it's time for everybody to unify themselves and come together and say, listen, we the people, not just Jim or Joe Blow the plumber, but everybody in unison is saying, we're not going to take this anymore. Y'all, if you just tuned in, you listen to topic 5-4-3-2-1 shutdown. That's what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about the shutdown that lasted 16 days, that furloughed thousands and thousands of federal workers and closed national parks and, you know, healthcare research and weather information centers and you name it, museums, federal buildings. It all went down for 16 days. That's what we're talking about tonight. We're going to the phone lines. We're going to go to area code 443-692. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Good evening, Carrie and guest. How are you? This is Gio.
Hi, Gio.
I just want to say a lot of this, too, has to do with the president himself. And it's a lot of it is about the president. And how I'm getting there is this. Actually, the president himself real eloquently went there in a speech last month, and he left it alone, and everybody took it as candid and funny when he said the GOP was too busy trying to mess with him. Now, here's something that happened on Hardball with Chris Matthews, and it kind of went under everybody's radar because the show took place, you know, under the shadow of the shutdown and everything else was going on, and of course the GOP-friendly media didn't blast this in our face like they do the weeded garden at the White House. But be that as it may, Representative Peter King, he's a Republican, he's one of those, and those being the GOP, came out on an episode of Hardball with Chris Matthews last month and said that there were 30 to 40 lawmakers who wish they could erase President Obama's presidency.
They could do what?
Now,
they could erase
his presidency. Yeah. Right. He went on to elaborate and say that they would do anything to blemish his legacy. So when you start talking about, and people start wondering, well, why in the world would someone not want one of the most comprehensive health care programs that, you know, it's ever come along in the history of America to go into effect that's obviously going to benefit so many Americans? There's your answer.
Go ahead, Carl.
Oh, I'm just laughing. He's correct. You know, you got these repundant racists out there like Mr. Claiborne, who was last weekend, you know, at the White House in lawn. You know, they was out there, you know, with the rally with Michelle Bachmann and Ted Cruz and all of them, and shouting, talking about the president should come out. Well, first of all, he said that the president should put the Quran down and leave the country and come out with his hands up. And he told, I think, Martin Bashir today on his show.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, that it was metaphorically. And James Peace was on there, you know, professor of Lee High University. And, of course, McClellan was saying that Obama is not like the other presidents or something like it should be like, he should not like George Washington. And James Peterson, African-American scholar, stated, what you mean that he's not like George Washington? George Washington was a racist. And so that kind of told Clayton. But, yes, you know, we got these type of extreme right-wing radicals out here that really stir up a lot of trouble. And it's messing the country up. It's really just messing the country up. I actually thought we were going to default. I did.
You thought we were going
to? Just because they hate the president, Obama, so bad, but at the same time, I realized that they were already doing this, creating a win for Hillary Clinton in 2016, which that's going to happen anyway. But for a minute there, I actually thought that they were going to be actually childish or silly enough or foolish enough to actually go over the cliff like that. Because they racial hate.
Back in the early 2000s, I got involved in lobbying for midwifery. At the time in Texas, it was a big issue for my family. It was a big issue here in Texas. I mean, we went from like 650 midwives down to like 100 in 10 years. And this was 10 years ago from now. So I'm scared to even know what it is now, but the doctors in Texas basically just wanted to oust the midwives, and that's a whole nother thing. But how it's pertinent right now is I learned one of the most valuable lessons I've ever learned in my life, and it was this. When they legislate all night long, and so we got watchers together, and we all took turns sitting in the gallery and watching. And on the Memorial weekend, I got a phone call at about 3 in the morning. We had a traditional phone tree. So if something happened, you know, we could all call each other. And a representative from Corpus Christi had come up in the middle of the night and added an amendment to another bill that had already gone through its second round. Oh, now we're echoing.
Again, yeah, you're echoing.
It's so weird. Just a second.
Okay, Carrie Ann's working on her phone. Her phone system. But y'all, this shutdown cost us $24 billion. That's with a B. We're going to close Carrie Ann's phone line while she works on whatever that is. But that's $24 billion. Okay, that didn't help the problem. That's $24 billion with a B. Okay, yes, it is. Okay, so that's a whole lot of money, y'all. That could have fed a whole lot of people. It could have given a whole lot of people housing that are homeless. You know, it's just so much that could have been, I mean, people across the world that are hungry could have been fed. What is wrong with the picture that we can play with $24 billion and nobody think it's a problem? I mean, my panel, can y'all address that question for me? How can
we because, you know, the food stamp program that they have voted to try to cut $39 billion from, that was $24 billion right there. We could have kept that in place, because it's going to now allow 210 children who own the free lunches. They're going to lose their free lunches, they said. 170,000 veterans want to lose some benefits, and
was that during the shutdown or from now on?
Excuse me?
Was that during the shutdown?
No, just before the shutdown. Remember, they slashed the food stamp by $39 billion starting in January.
Okay.
The Congress did. And so $24 billion is what they, you know, what the American people lost during the shutdown. So, I mean, that was $24 billion that could have went into the food stamp program.
You know,
and right now, you know, we have this bipartisan budget conference coming up, and the bipartisan budget negotiations on the table now, Social Security again, Medicare, Medicaid, and food stamps, you know. And so Of course, you know, the Democrats' agenda is to end the sequester cuts, protect the big threes, and possible new tax revenues. And so these Republicans
well, you know,
are really...
I really want to try to share what I was going to share because it's so important. You know, at the end of the day, that guy that was a representative did that, and it was to move the midwifery board over to the nursing board instead of from under the health department, which would have been great because then the nurses answered to the doctors. So it was all orchestrated, all right? But in the middle of the night, we got that phone call. We all started calling each other, and there was about five women that showed up the next day, which was Memorial Day. I was one of them. Some of these women, there's two or three of them, came from our farthest borders, and a few of us had babies on our hips, and we literally walked the halls of the Capitol, and we knocked on everybody's door, and we didn't get to speak to any of the representatives or the senators because they were all on the floor, but we were able to speak to their aides, and most of them had never even heard of midwifery, and we just kept educating and educating, and about 5 o'clock, that all met back in the center. And it just so happened that we were just all standing there when one of the senators walked out. And, of course, we hit him up right then, and we explained to him that this bill was going up for its third vote, and it had this amendment in it, and to please stop it. And he said, you know what? I don't even know what you're talking about, but just because I don't know is good enough reason to get up there and tell them we shouldn't do this. We can't vote for something we don't even know about. And that's
echo,
what happens.
Echo
you know,
is bad.
Doesn't it surprise me? Every time I start to try to share a message, I get this echo. I wonder what kind of crazy spiritual warfare that could be.
Now it got better.
I
guess they don't want you to tell that story. That is weird. Every time you get in the middle of a...
Exactly. I know, because it's important. It's so important that people know. I mean, it was just a handful of women, just a few. And we changed and saved the day. That's all it was, just a handful of women. So what can we do now with the tools of our time? Like
yes.
Carrie was saying, I mean, if we're collective and we're simultaneous and we're passionate, we can make a difference anywhere and everywhere. So,
I agree.
I mean, it's all we got to do.
And
I
completely
I'm glad that echoing stopped.
It stopped when you go figure. You know, yeah, I just saw so much wrong. I just saw so much wrong with this shutdown. I'm looking for my notes on WIC. The WIC program, you know, which is I'm sorry, I don't know what that program stands for. It's Women Something Care, I believe, but it deals with
women,
mothers,
infants, children.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's right. Women, infant, children. Okay, that's it. That's what WIC stands for, y'all. And that program was in jeopardy during the shutdown. And I found out that because that particular program was in jeopardy, that there was a philanthropist and his wife, and I'm trying to find their names because I think it's so vitally important. I remember the last name was Arnold. But they stepped in and gave money to keep it funded so that it kept going. And I just think that's a great thing, but it shouldn't have had to happen. I mean, absolutely. Programs like Head Start, programs like WIC, those programs are absolutely needed in this community. And it makes no sense that we're sending money across the shore, across the seas to feed hungry people when we were going to leave our own children hungry over here during the shutdown. That makes no sense to me. I'm looking for my notes on that, but I absolutely – oh, here it goes. Meals on Wheels was left hanging by a thread during the shutdown.
That's correct.
And then, I'm sorry?
That's correct. Go ahead, Rich.
And so and they also said the education took a hit. The Head Start program in six states would have left over 7,000 children basically involuntarily on vacation and a number of low-income student parents with no child care assistance. So the program was reopened due to a $10 million gift by billionaire philanthropist John and Laura Arnold. I'm sorry, that was the Head Start program that they gave their money to. Head Start, y'all.
That is so awesome.
That's crazy, and it's wonderful on one hand that they were so generous and they did that, but why did they have to put their own money into something that was already funded? You know, so I just thought that was just absolutely incredible. So it wasn't a WIC program that they gave their money to, but they gave $10 million of their own money to make sure that the Head Start program for 7,000 kids was not stopped. So it's just things like that that really made me angry when I did the research for the show, and I'm thinking, what the heck, Meals on Wheels, Head Start? You know, while we managed to keep the gym open for the congressmen. I mean, come on, y'all. We kept their gym open. You know, and one of them had the audacity to complain that nobody was washing their towels, you know, during the shutdown. But at the same time, we're about to cut off WIC and Head Start and Meals on Wheels, but they still kept their gym open. It was so many things about the way they handled this that just wasn't right. They made sure their paychecks kept coming, but the federal workers' paychecks were not rolling as usual. Y'all, there's so much wrong with that on so many levels.
I'm looking at it, and it's complex, but yet simple. When we look at the U.S. government, our government, every penny that basically they have or that they take in terms of tax dollars, if the American people, by and large, would start looking at that like their bank account, like that's my money, or that's my money that was taxed or that I am investing. If someone went to your bank account and you had $1,000 and they determined that they were going to take $900 of that $1,000 and do what they wanted to do, I guarantee that person would be standing up, hollering, doing everything that they could to keep them from basically securing their money and doing what they want to do, somebody doing something with your hard-earned money.
Absolutely. When you send that person to Congress, then that's like saying, hey, you're the trustee for my bank account.
There you go. That's true.
So we're letting people go to the Hill, and we're letting them do their thing. I mean, we're letting them get away with bills that are, you know, 5,000 pages long. We're letting them get away with the bills. Some of the bills that they pass, you know, are thousands of pages long.
But I think what you're saying, though, in terms of and we are – but here's the piggyback or caveat to that. That when a lot of people are uninformed about Congress, the bills, what's going on, and I call it they commonly say pork barrel.
Yes.
When we're supposed to retrograde out of Afghanistan by December of 2014, no later than. By the time we're finally out, we will have left behind $7 billion worth of military equipment. Now, that amount has already been calculated that was left in Iraq. So if you consider that when people don't know, a lot of times people, they just innocently, they don't know. And I think if there's more of a movement to become informed, because a lot of people in their wildest dreams, if you told them, you know what, when the government pulls out of Afghanistan, they're going to leave behind $7 billion worth of equipment of all sorts.
Well, that's the thing. That's exactly why I do the broadcasting that I do, because you've got to have that information. And, you know, I tried to start this thing called Patriot Roundtable because I felt, in a virtual sense, I felt like, you know, we have a virtual table that we can all come and sit at. And the thing of it is when you are putting your pressure on, it's not power of the person, it's power of the people. And most people are going to gravitate towards results. If it's negative, they're going to gravitate away. If it's positive, they're going to gravitate towards that. And the truth is that you get results when you get involved. And when you educate, and it's just not the popular thing, and people feel like, oh, well, why bother? Because they're not understanding the value of their involvement, the value of overcoming apathy. But if we get out there and we keep talking about how awesome it is when you overcome apathy and you start talking about the results that you get, I mean, all these people that are in Congress right now, like we've all talked about on the show tonight, they should be ousted, fired. So we've got to make sure that we don't walk away from the show, for example, and just talk about it. Like, you know, what can we actually do to make sure
and
that
I got the answer.
Start making phone calls, emails.
And I got the answer. There's a petition that they have put online on move.org. And y'all listen.
We're gifted with these blessings of, you know, blog talk radio and websites and so forth. And you know what? It is the power of the people. And all you got to do is talk about the results. You know, you've been talking about the results tonight, the negative fallout results of the shutdown. I mean, we could spend hours and hours. There's so many. But, you know, I just have to say, it's like, okay. It's like my son. When we moved, he's been in orchestra all his life. All of a sudden now, no orchestra in his high school. There's no orchestra in the entire county I live in. And the first thing my mind is thinking is, oh, my God, what do I have to start an orchestra? You know, because that's what we've got to do. We have to roll up our sleeves, and we have to get involved. And you're doing it, Carrie, because you're out there every Friday night, and you're so faithful with that. And the people on the panel here tonight, I can tell as well, and y'all sound so educated. It's awesome. But the thing of it is we're the few, you know? We're the few. So, like, Chris,
but you know what, I can, you know what, but I look at it every week, though, that I always want Center Stage to be this. I use this platform every week just to put information out there, because I just don't want to be a show about fluff. I want to be always educating people about things that I learn. And believe it or not, every week I do this show, I learn something, because I stretch myself every week to go and do subjects about things that I don't know anything about going in. But I go and I get the experts and I bring them to you, or I'll bring a panel that's informed to you like we have tonight, because I think that's what it's about. I think when you have a platform, you're supposed to use it, you know, for the good of the community, not just for yourself. And so I don't want to chase celebrities. Y'all notice I don't do that. I chase people who have information to share with you all. And so one thing that I found while researching for this show was there's a petition going on, y'all, and I don't know if y'all are aware of it. There's a petition that's being hosted on moveon.org to arrest GOP leaders, the GOP leadership on sedition charges. It states that it says, I call on the Justice Department. This is what the petition says. Not me, y'all. This is what the petition says. I call on the Justice Department of the United States of America to arrest Republican Majority Leader Eric Cantor, Speaker of the House John Boehner, and other decision-making House Republicans. And, y'all, as of this morning, I mean this morning, they got 36,000 signatures by Friday morning. Beg your pardon?
I read that. Go ahead. I'm with you.
Yeah, and it says, according to the U.S. Code, a seditious conspiracy is part of any conspiracy to oppose by force the authority thereof, or force to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States. So I understand this is not an easy charge to win, but at the same time, there's somebody who's already decided to try to make it happen. And so, basically, you know, isn't sedition pretty much like, y'all, like treason?
Yes, very, very much so. And I think they all had Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Tatum, who are the queens of distortion. You know, we have a segment of the population, as he said earlier, who just don't know. We also have a segment of the population who wants to be lied to in order to satisfy their racial lust. Now, that's what's sad. We know that they put their racial lust before the best interest of the country. And so they need to be arrested.
You know, one thing that's interesting about what we're talking about tonight is, you know, and I find this true in all the audiences that I am blessed to talk to.
Got to echo
again. It doesn't seem to matter how old these people are that I talk to. It doesn't matter what race they are. It doesn't matter what party they are. It doesn't matter how much money they have, and it doesn't matter where they live. The thing that I hear from the gist of the people that I'm able to talk to is that We're all struggling. The economy is I mean, y'all, in the 90s, I had 7 children at home that I was raising, okay? And we made less money, and I had more money to do things with my family than we do now in, you know, the 2010s, and are making more money, and I only have 1 child left. And, you know, their times are hard, and everyone's operating in
Marianne, that echo is incredible.
Wow, it is, isn't it? It's happening again.
Are you in the room with a computer or some type of other device?
I think I'm in the room with, well, I'll just knock it up to spiritual warfare again. How about that?
Goodness. Okay, I'm going to close your mic for a second and try to open it back up and see if that helps, but the echo is absolutely coming from Carrie Ann's mic, y'all. Let me see.
And it's only...
Okay. Now, see, when I close Carrie Ann's mic, I don't hear the echo at all. Okay, now I hear it. Okay, maybe that's somebody else other than... Carrie Ann, is your mic still open? Okay, I don't know whose that is then.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Let me hear you, Christopher.
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it has to be Carrie Ann. I don't know. Let's try Carrie Ann again. Carrie Ann, let's try you again.
Okay. I was trying to mute it in between.
Okay.
It's echoing.
I absolutely think it's you, though. But, y'all, you know, the thing is, there's so much to be learned from this shutdown. And as I said earlier, I think it's a dry run. And unfortunately, a dry run means it's going to happen again. But to my panel, what can we do between now and January 15th and February 7th to make certain this doesn't happen again? Y'all have any suggestions?
I do.
Okay.
I think we need to start putting out our own efforts to get people to call and write and call and write over and over and over again and flood our representatives' offices with the demand that they do not allow this to happen again or we're not sending you back.
That is you, Carrie.
That's a cry everybody has to keep making.
That is your phone. Christopher, you agree with that?
Yes. I mean, that is, I think that's always a good basis, foundation, and a primary tool. But when you're dealing with the likes of greed, entitlement, you're dealing with the sector that has become accustomed to the type of lifestyle and I think the type of conduct separated from being a public servant, those things you do have to continually do. But I also believe in stepping up the game in terms of holding individuals accountable. Some of these things we have to go for the jugular. And when I say go for the jugular, I'm talking about pursuing, doing the big petitions, also pushing for different things in the Constitution and the amendments and the bylaws of Congress that will create some change. See, until we actually get some representation on Capitol Hill to be able to unearth some of the things that they've written into law, a lot of things may get somewhat better, but they will never, I think, get to the point where they should be this actually going to benefit the people. So we're right. I think we have to dialogue and discuss, but then at the end of the day, if we don't do something with the laws and the amendments, I think we're going to continue to kind of like chase our tail because they're not giving up the power. And unless we take it and unless we make it so that it's far more difficult for them to do, because right now it's pretty easy for them to continue to do what they're going to do. And will there be another government shutdown in the future? It sure will, because they've made it far too easy for the internal mechanism of Congress and the House and the Senate to be able to do it. So I think, A, continue to vote, get people registered to vote, You have to continue to do the petitions and call your congressmen, your senators, your representatives, and so forth. But I think we have to come together in some kind of grassroots power base, because the days of trying to go to an organization like Operation Rainbow Push, National Action Network, and even the NAACP for so many, because I heard a friend of mine say basically he felt that those so-called civil rights organizations that normally would have a greater initiative to try to get change in Washington, they have become toothless tigers for a lot of different reasons. So we're going to have to take it. But some of those things that are done based on law, we're going to have to attack those and get some of those changed.
I agree. And one thing, and I'll address this back to you again, Chris, and I'll let Carl, you just chime in on it, and also carry on. You know, the face of this shutdown will be remembered by most of us as the veterans who stormed, you know, through the gates of the memorials, the World War II memorials, and demanded that they be let in, and then they took the gates and they threw those in front of the White House. Now, I have two things to say about that, y'all. First of all, I don't agree with that. First of all, I've always been taught that you have to respect authority. That I get. So I don't think that they were right to remove the gates, and I definitely don't think that they were right to throw them at the White House, in front of the White House. Now, my second point to that is, if black folks had done that,
that
would have been.
That's funny. Now you're echoing.
Am I echoing? I think that's your fine, Caroline. But I thought that was wrong. And I respect the veterans and their service to this country. But I think, you know, our president is still the commander in chief. And so,
yes.
You know, if the government shut down, it's shut down for everybody. If the memorials are closed, they're not closed just for the veterans, they're closed for everybody. And so I would never say to anybody the right thing to do would be to disrespect the authority in that manner. Now, Chris, you know, you're a military man. You agree?
Oh, I definitely agree. I mean, I believe that I agree and concur with you in terms of people can even they can even show that they are upset, that they're angry, but you have to do it. If at all possible, in a lawful and a civil way. Martin Luther King Jr. always believed in nonviolent but sometimes civil disobedience. But that civil disobedience does not mean destruction of property. It does not mean that you're violating the law in such a way that's violent. So I think when you supersede that, now you're getting into territory. Now, some people may understand that in those particular veterans' mind that they may have thought and felt justified. But once again, once you cross that line, you're going to have less credibility to then continue to pursue your cause. So, you know, we have to take things up in a civil way, and it's okay to file your grievance. But I think when you then violate something like that and everybody else has to also follow those same guidelines, I think that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. You can't violate, and then if you do, then at that point it should become criminal. You should be subject just like anybody else that would. And I know you made the comment about, if a group of black veterans or a group of black individuals had done that, just like the two individuals that basically snuck into the White House, we know what would have happened. They would have been up under the jail. But I believe in civil disobedience and nonviolence, but it should be done in a way that is not violent.
I agree. Carl Mitchell, you agree with that?
I 100% agree with that. You've got to follow.
Absolutely. Nonviolent, you know, that's the way, because, you know, we can't, buck the government, of course, you know, because, you know, we don't have enough weaponry power to buck them, first of all. I do agree that it was these people standing in front of the White House, throwing things at the White House and making all type of belligerent statements and racial epithets and whatnot. It was a total disregard for authority. and the presidency. And I think you know we're going to have to focus also on the midterm elections. People don't understand how important not only is the election of the presidency, you know, for us coming out to vote, but the midterm elections as well, because that's when Congress is coming in the Senate. I mean, just president at all for the people, the majority of the people voted for the president. We may have a Congress that's like we have now. This is the worst Congress we've ever had in the history of the United States. This would have been the first default since the 1700s. We definitely need to focus on those midterm elections. Aware that they need to get out to vote during the midterm. Not only control who's in the White House, but we can also control who's in the Senate and in the House of Congress.
I agree. And you know, and listen, this weekend, I'm speaking of still on topic, Al. This weekend in San Antonio, Texas, there is going to be an open carry rally. Okay? Now y'all know it ain't gonna be no folks of color down there because we have it. Okay, y'all just read between the lines on that, forgive me. But we got better than this. And show up at an open carry rally. But in San Antonio this weekend, I think they call it at the Alamo, they're going to be having an open carry rally where you are supposed to come with your weapons strapped to you to a rally. And I listened to them talk about that this week, and just all kind of crazy thoughts were just coming in my head, y'all, about how bad they could have turned out if that was the NAACP that had called that rally or Jesse Jackson or somebody. It just I understand what they're doing, and I get the reason behind it, but I just don't know if they're going about it right. I mean, would y'all agree that maybe that's just not the smartest thing to do right now? I mean, is it just me?
Well, no, I don't think it's just you.
You can push yourself to the point where I guess I'm not saying that people should not gather, that they should not try to make some kind of a civil public forum, but you have to be careful how you're doing that because it could be viewed as a certain way. I'm not saying don't do anything of a gathering nature, but sometimes the way that you initiate something and that you establish it could have greater implications than you think.
Oh, absolutely. And it has to be peaceful. You know, but I just think that rallies are great. If you can gather people together and have a little bit of music, a little bit of food, and put out some information that is really, I think telling people about the results, hey, check this out. If we do this, this can happen. When these people did it, this happened. When these people did it, this happened. You know, really talking about the results.
Well, let me ask you this. Should they carry their guns? Should they carry their guns?
Well, I'm sorry. I don't know anything about this rally. I don't know, you know, who goes and what the statistics in the past have been for it. But
No, this,
you know,
I think is first, from what I understand, this is a first time thing. And I think they're in protest for some of the things going on in the country.
Yeah, if you're gathering in a protest with guns, I mean, that's definitely a dangerous equation, you know. But then again, you know, it's like if we really care about that, then we need to get out there and we need to educate the people in our community and say, hey, they're having these things. Please, let's not have this happen again. You know, let's watch for this. I mean, I have to keep hitting it home on that one same thing, the involvement, because it matters. I mean, I remember last year it's been longer than that now. It was 2011. There was all kinds of crazy and chatter and activity over the bill that funds the military. And we were discussing this on a lot of my shows. And we, with just a few people, we had a chat room and we had the phone lines, and we started getting people to write. And mostly email, because that's the way it goes mostly these days, and call. And we could, we we would stream C-SPAN so that we could talk about it in the chat room since we can't be on the Hill. And you know what? It felt like we were making a difference. And there was thousands and thousands and thousands of people that were involved in it after about a week. And we didn't stay together. Right after that, the holidays came and everybody kind of fizzled out. And I just have to keep thinking to myself, with the tools of our time and with as bad as things are, you know, if we could get out there with some plans that are made up of things that work and that are constitutional, what can we get done? You know, when we're collective and simultaneous and passionate, Carrie. I mean, we can get so much done. And even if it's not, like, enough the first time, results are results. Then we've got even more leverage when we say, hey, guess what? Join us. We can make a difference. Get involved.
I absolutely agree with all that you said. I mean, seriously. I think that people like, and, you know, and I'm not picking on this guy because, you know what, I think it's easy to make one person a scapegoat. But, you know, when I looked at what happened during these 16 days, Ted Cruz was making a run for the White House, y'all, in 2016. And I can't blame him. Yeah, he absolutely stretched out.
He makes me want to use the F word and green eggs and ham in the same sentence. I mean, I just, that is a perfect example of how someone is abusing their position.
You know, I'm not gonna go there with you. I think that none of that was by accident. I don't think his party just let him, you know, run astray and they couldn't grab him by the coattails. I don't believe any of that. I think he was absolutely testing the waters for 2016.
Yes.
You agree with that, Chris?
Calculated, and and I'm not necessarily mad at him. Yes, I think he was testing the water, and I think a lot of people were because everybody is jockeying for positions and their vantage points in terms of what is in the best interest for them.
Yeah, me.
I think we have to get back to how are they, you know, when you sit back and that's like in junior high school, so forth, the frog or the worm you're dissecting, to see what, how it ticks, see the anatomy of it. With Congress and when, or just with politics in general, there's a few key things that are there. If those things are not addressed, you will get relatively no closer to resolving the corruption to the individuals that have the unanimous power and the ability to continue to hoodwink and commit some of the crimes and atrocities that they're doing. So I would just simply say that voting and then also advocating in the sense of how you are going to be heard. And you are heard by being able to vote people in, but also having an organization or organizations with platforms and some attorneys. You're going to have these things because in terms of change, it's
That's
law.
Okay.
It's not love and compassion. I mean, it should be, but it's law. And until you can with Kate.
We were working together at that round table that I was talking about, and we came to the conclusion after a few weeks, let's just call ourselves the Patriot Workforce because, you know, we felt like we were working for our country, but at the same time, labels get in the way so bad, you know, every kind of label. And at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, if your neighborhood is being taken over by a flood, everybody hopefully is going to start working together. And in those moments, it doesn't matter so much, you know, what religion you are, what race you are, and what party you are. Those things, unfortunately, they are there. They always matter. But really, they shouldn't. It's about getting the work done. It's about working together. And it's not a popular thing to do, you know. We need to make that more popular, working together and actually getting things done. And they're not, you know. And they could.
Absolutely agree. Carl Mitchell, do you think that this shutdown hurts the morale of the American people? Do you think that, you know, the people just walked away from this thing totally disgusted and just, you know, at wit's ends with what's going on. And you know, it just basically, it just didn't leave a good feeling.
Well, it didn't leave a good feeling for the Republican Party, that's for sure. I mean, they you know, they're still trying to claim some type of victory, some type of ghost victory.
But what did it do to the American people?
Oh, the American people, it kind of created a disgust or distrust in the leadership. Actually, it just put a distrust in leadership. I mean, they really hurt. The way the American people see their government. They just cannot trust the Congress they have right now. They don't have no trust for them. It's bad.
I think
the polls say
that it's the Congress's lowest rate in history right now.
People are left with a general uncertainty about what's going to happen from day to day or from month to month. You know, so you know, like we had a fight come up again in 3 months. I mean, even the employers are left with uncertainty. You know, and so, but you know, the president. One thing I have to say that the president, I do believe, has humbled himself before the Congress. But in the words of Elijah Muhammad, I'm not even a Muslim, and I don't agree with everything on Elijah Muhammad. One thing he said before, he said that when you know humble yourself. For these type of group of people, basically, he said, "We get you no further than a lamb who hums himself to the wolf, until, of course, the wolf is satisfied." And that the characteristics of these type of people, you know what I'm saying, that little group of people, I say, is evil, and that others are affected by their wickedness, and that because he seeks to double toss them and to overtake them. And that he's not persuaded by truth where truth is asked. So you know, even Martin Luther King said that you know, this affectionate thing that he was talking about, you know, this love that he was preaching about. He even said that you know, that he don't take a love in this situation as an affectionate bond. You know, I don't know. You know, the president got his hands full, but I do think he had done a great job with trying to hum himself and be bipartisan and everything with the Republican Party and the Tea Party advocates and whatnot, but they are just way too far to the right. They're way too far extreme and way too radical. Their language is, and their epitaphs is just too extreme as well for the American people. And Ted Cruz claimed that he's doing the will of the American people, what the American people want, and John Boehner and these folks here, Eric Cantor. But the American people has already voted, and they voted for Barack Obama. And so if the American people wanted to repeal Obamacare, then they could have done so if they haven't voted for Mitt Romney. And so this American people thing that Ted Cruz keeps talking about, as if he's speaking for the general majority, is just laughable.
I don't think that he's got that many fans outside of the Tea Party base. I think that most people think that he's ridiculous and self-serving. And I hope that, I mean, you know, he had a lot of rope he took and then kind of hung himself with it a little bit. There's not that many people that I see out there that think what he did was great. And I'm glad, because it wasn't.
Did anybody else see the stenographer that some people are saying lost her mind on the floor, but I don't think she did.
No.
The night of the vote, she had to be pulled from her chair, but she was screaming, "The Constitution was written by Freemasons, and be not deceived that God is not mocked." And she went on to say, I'm sorry?
Who said that? Michelle Bachman? I think it was someone later.
No, not her name. All I heard them call her was Molly. They said she had been a stenographer on the House floor for years.
Yes.
But for some reason, I'm sorry?
Really?
Yeah.
Google it.
She'd been a stenographer for years, but that night she was pulled away from her chair screaming, you know, the Constitution was written by Freemasons, and that be not deceived, God is not mocked, you know, and basically some things about, you know, some religious things that she was saying. But I think she was on to something, that she, I think she was calling them evil. I think she said that they were evil, and that, you know, all of that was going on down there. And there's no telling how much this lady over the years have not seen in terms of,
yeah,
you know, backfills and, you know, evilness, and how basically these people are on the floor working for themselves and not working for the American people. And I just think it may be just a, you know, a combination of things just coming together at the same time, and she just let them have it. And they said that she'd been working as a house stenographer for years. But she did that just the other night, but she did. She said that the Constitution was written by Freemasons. And she began
really feeling the pressure being right there at the floor of all of it, writing it all down, you know, and
mm-hmm.
being scared like everybody else. But I do think, you know, like, not Chris, but your other panelist, he was talking about, you know, people being in hard times, and it's so true. You know, when you're living in hard times and you don't know, you know, you're living paycheck to paycheck, sometimes it's even harder than that. I mean, that's where we're at in our country, and it's happening to so many families. I mean, I remember when I was 12 was when it was 1976, and the country's birthday, you know, was that summer. And it just seemed like for months up to 4th of July that year, you know, everyone was talking about it, and I'll never forget it, you know, red, white, and blue everywhere. And I remember thinking, oh my God, this is amazing, you know, our country is amazing. And just 3 years later, I became a teenage mom, and I thought to myself, wow, you know, this is, it's okay, this doesn't have to ruin my life, you know, I don't have to be like my mom, and we don't have to live in poverty, and blah, 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 blah. And what I did was I started a club at my school for the other teenage moms, and I asked the home economics teacher, could we use your room to meet, and would you put some films in? You know, we could learn something, and maybe just being with other teenage moms would help. So at 15 years old, that was my thinking, and I grew up like that. You know, if you've got a problem, you don't bitch about it unless you're going to do something about it. And then educate yourself, you know, and surround yourself with like-minded people, and et cetera. And I just feel like, you know, all the times in my life when I've tried those things, it's worked. And it was by the grace of God, you know. Even our founding fathers, everything was by the grace of God, and God we trust, you know. And everybody wants to get all away from that because there's so many, you know, differences in that. But by the end of the day, it matters. Everybody's having a hard time, and you make different kinds of decisions when you're thinking in the principle of scarcity. And it's hard. I think we can make a big difference, though, by doing like what we're doing tonight. To me, you've got to engage. You've got to get engaged. And nowadays, that means you've really got to get out there and gather people and motivate them. And then you've got to discuss. And then
I think the options we brought up earlier are good starts. I think that absolutely we should flood the email boxes of our congresspeople, and we should absolutely start a petition that says if you don't do your job, you won't have a job. I think we absolutely have to put them, you know, in the hot seat and let them know, listen, you don't work for yourself, you work for us. You know, so I another thing that, you know, it's just so many things that, and we're running out of time. It's just so many things that happen as the 16 days tick by. I wondered how secure were our borders, you know, during the 16 days. You know, how many illegals did we let into this country? And y'all, listen, I'm not against, you know, immigration reform, but I am against people just coming across the border and getting benefits when everybody over here that's already citizens haven't been taken care of. And so that's my stance on that. And so I just wonder, you know, for 16 days, did we secure the borders as we should have?
Well, you know what? I honestly have friends and colleagues that work with the Border Patrol. Well, yes and no. I mean, the operations I think probably were diminished to a certain degree. But again, the same Congress that we're talking about that is still trying to put up the protective fence and hire more Border Patrol and security forces, this is the same Congress that then allows 300,000 to 400,000 individuals, immigrants from Mexico to come in because they have detention centers that make money. Now, I'm not saying just conspiracy that that is the only reason that that is happening, but part of the reason that the border is not as secure as it could be is because it makes money, and it makes a lot of money, all the way up to $175 a day per individual, and that's not including any of the other care that they may need. So I think that unless we're really going to get down to the root of the problem in terms of not just the economy in Mexico, and why people are trying to come across for various reasons, for income, for health care. You can come across the border and have a baby, and that baby now becomes a citizen and so forth. But I think you have to dissect that back, and you have to peel back the layers to see, yes, it's the right thing to protect your borders, and people have to come into the country legally and by the book, but also a lot of the individuals that are passing the mandates benefit. They benefit because that's another lobbying group. So we're talking millions into billions of dollars of an industry that's not even with the 2.5 million men and women that are in the regular federal and state prison. This is just detention centers.
Well, and the thing of it is like right now, the things that you're talking about, this is the stuff that knowledge is made of. You know, you can't just agree to something. You've got to have informed consent. And you know, this kind of information, when you're talking about that, you're talking about statistics and facts, and you know, it's information that speaks for itself. It's true and absolute results. And I strongly believe that the more we get out there and we tell people, we give them these examples, and we're like, because, I mean, at the end of the day, when you hear the truth and the truth says what a ridiculous, foolish thing it is, you know, pretty soon even the fools stand up and go and back out. You know, at the end of the day, there's very few people who want to still stand out there looking like a fool, and everybody's, you know, whoa, it's you. And, you know, I just think that the more people that get involved, the more opportunity that we educate, the more people will get involved because you don't have to convince them of anything. They're just hearing the results. The truth, and then they get educated, and that's when they're like, okay, what can we do about it? So when we wake them up, we've got to have solutions. We've got to be shovel ready when we give them the facts and kind of scare them. Then we got to be able to give them solutions too, which is great because we've talked about that tonight, and I hope there's not a bunch of people out there going, oh, there they go, emails and phone calls. But you want to know what? Honestly, it's everything. The emails and the phone calls. You know, Carrie, in your research, I don't know if you've ever read anywhere, but I've done a lot of research on the New World Order, too, and one of the most interesting, and praise God, I love this, things that I learned was these people, you know, the elite and the invisible whatever, you know, their worst fear is our vote. They can take everything
away. I agree,
and
I absolutely agree with that. But, you know, voting is the key because, you know, the thing is no matter how many elections are rigged, and I believe that happens, but I think, you know, if you change that 30% to 90% to 100% of people getting out and voting, trust me, you can't rig that kind of election. Yeah, let's go back to the phone lines. We're going to pick up 404-343. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hi. I wrote an article today called The Secret Government on Capitol Hill. Basically, I talked about how this the debt ceiling being passed in Congress is only a temporary Band-Aid to, you know, what is to come, basically. It's a temporary Band-Aid to an economic system already in trouble. And we're headed for a financial collapse in this country eventually. It's going to be a financial collapse, and it's going to be worse than the Great Depression. And, you know, sometimes when I tell people about the Illuminati secret societies and how they manufacture laws against the people, they manufacture laws to enslave us, you know, because historically we have risen up against tyrannical governments. We have risen up against them, and we have overthrew them in many different cultures, you know. And, you know, obviously these secret societies have a lot of money, because that's how they control everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how they are able to buy elections. That's how they are able to elect officials that would do their bidding, like they elected President Barack Obama. And, you know, that's basically, you know, what I wanted to say. You know, I talked about the secret society or the secret government in Capitol Hill. So that's it.
Wow. And, you know, I think, I'm sorry, you were going to say what, Christopher? Was that Christopher or Carl?
No. I was just like, wow, that was something.
Well, you know, we've always long heard that you had the Illuminati, and you had the Circle. They have a book by a guy named Tex Hall called Circle Intrigue, the Hidden in the Circle, or the Global Illuminati Conspiracy. So, you know, you always have had those type of theories out there that we have a secret society that's a high order of the government and rich people who put strings on everything going on in the country and in the world. So, you know, I can't say there's yeah or nay, you know, against that or what.
And they're all afraid of that one thing. If there was ever one thing that would keep those people, those rich elite people, awake at night, it's our vote. It's the one thing they cannot take away from us. It's our vote. And that's what people don't understand. That's the greatest inalienable right that we were born with, is our right to vote. And everything was set up on that right. All the stuff that the Founding Fathers did, all their work, all that blood, all that treasure lost was set up so that the people could vote. And that's how come when the people aren't voting, none of that stuff works, because it was built for a society that votes. And they just don't.
But they target the way, but they do target the way the lower classes vote. They don't have IDs. You know, sometimes they don't have the IDs, and then they all kind of attacks.
You're
using,
you're right.
Mandy, you know, people out vote. You know, they study the lower order of the population and see what they don't have in order to. Make a vote, you know, decide a vote. And so they focus on that.
Warrants, maybe warrants out for their arrest that, you know, they haven't paid. So they don't. There's a lot of serious encroachment on someone's rights to vote when that happens. You're so right.
And you know what? You're absolutely right. And I would like to also say that when it's our job at the grassroots level to get those people who have been disenfranchised and those people who don't think it makes a difference. It's shows like this, it's platforms like this, it's movements like those petitions, because you're right, we do have to reassert and win a lot of those people back so that they can jump on board on the team. And not everybody can do or will do the same thing, but just having those people along, informing
them. But having it together, it adds up. It will add up.
Absolutely. Yes, yes.
Let me quickly go over the demands that the Republicans put on the table. Number one, they said that they wanted to defund Obamacare. Number two, they said they wanted to delay Obamacare. Number three, they wanted to delay individual mandates. Number four, they said they wanted to deny coverage to the president. Number five, they said deny coverage to the cabinet. Number six, they wanted to deny coverage to the congressional staffers. Well, I think four, five, and six, they got y'all. But anyway, number seven, they wanted to deny birth control coverage. Number 8, they wanted to approve Keystone Pipeline. Number 9, they wanted means testing for Medicare. 10, they wanted to change federal employee pension. Number 11, they wanted to expand oil drilling. Number 12, they wanted to block net neutrality. I don't know what that is. Number 13, they wanted tort reform. Number 14, they wanted to weaken regs for the coal-fired power plant. Number 15, they wanted tax code changes. Number 16, they wanted tort EPA coal ash regulations. Don't know what that means. Number 17, they wanted to repeal medical device tax. And number 18, they wanted to change rules on debt ceilings. That's what the Republican demands were for this shutdown. So we had 16 days of them going back and forth over this list. And per what I can understand, number 4, number 5, and number 6 they got. And I think, you know, deny coverage, are they saying deny Obamacare to the president? I mean, deny coverage to the president. What did they have, Obamacare? Deny coverage to the cabinet? Deny coverage to the congressional?
That to me, you know, if they're doing their job, then they should get paid and they should get insurance, you know? And again, it all comes down to the right thing. Like, there's no
– No. Let me cut you off there. No. First of all, we know Congress and the president did not want Obamacare. They don't have Obamacare, remember?
And that's great. But I'm saying, technically,
for them to put this in there, they didn't want it anyway. You know, so
yeah, and it's just it's all silliness. I just think that it's
no,
like,
it's not
it
silliness. It's game playing. I mean, that's just
exactly.
All game.
And
because they absolutely
right.
did not want Obamacare
not
for themselves.
Game
no, it's absolutely
everyone's
game.
Life is on the line.
So why put that in there as a demand when you absolutely knew that you didn't even want it in the first place? So you put it in there as though you
yeah.
want to deny somebody something that you didn't even really want in the first place.
That's correct.
Yeah, it's just not okay. I mean, they're putting everyone's lives on the line while they have this ridiculous.
But you
got to
keep in mind. I think that the in what Carrie is saying is that on one hand it doesn't make sense, but you have to keep in mind they do not care about everybody hanging by a thread and on the line. We're talking about a body of individuals that have become so powerful that slipping $100 million here, a billion there, $300,000 there, it means they're far removed from that. They're not. It's
well,
not
exactly.
at the...
And they get to do that because we let them. We as
well,
a country.
Yes,
you know,
but
the
some of that is...
That
some of that is because
no,
Congress
not.
Has gotten to the point between Congress, the Senate, and the Supreme Court in terms of changing, modifying, updating laws.
A little
that
bit
suit
here, a little bit
them.
There.
Yes, and that's what I'm getting back to. There's going to have to be some things that are going to have to be fought on the legal frontier.
Yes.
And so that's some of it. But they're doing that. It was a tactic because they were actually testing the waters to see what they could get away with, because it has implications for the future, for future House seats and for the presidency as well. So this is a barometer of where they're going to go with it, and they were able to do this because they're Congress. They were able to have enough votes to do what they needed to do, and
well, yeah,
I think they walked away with a gamut of information of how they're going to move forward.
Let him finish, Carrie.
I'm just agreeing with him.
Okay. No, I'm just saying. Let him. I couldn't hear both of y'all. I'm just trying to hear what he was saying. Can you finish that, Christopher?
No, essentially, this. I'm thinking of it similar to what you're saying. There are some things that are hidden, but yet purposely and willfully done. They're testing the waters because the power base. And you're right. They were fighting some things that really were irrelevant to if it was really dealing with the budget and the debt ceiling. Basically, Obamacare didn't have It had very little to do, but it was something that they were able to latch on to try and erode and degrade the president in terms of whether it's his legacy or some of the things that the president was trying to do. And the president is kind of limited to a certain degree because it's like being among wolves. And I'm not saying everything that I agree with everything with the president. I'm simply saying that with what he did put forth, not anybody who was against Obamacare, just dealing with that aside from the budget, I didn't hear or see anybody trying to put something on the table that was actually going to represent some fair, thought-out plan for some kind of health care for folks.
Right.
Yeah. Not the best, but it's something.
You know, the thing is, when you say, I want to take something off the table, give me something else.
Yes.
And they didn't do that. You know, if Obamacare is as bad as they say it is, and we will all see as the, you know, weeks and months to come, we'll see. But, you know,
I mean,
if you say take
like
it off.
But the key thing, it was written into law. See, that's a different thing. It's not a hypothetical, a bill that's going through. Once something is law, you have a lot of latitude, and that means a lot of interpretations and what you can do with it. And that's why I'm saying some of the things dealing with Congress, dealing with a greedy, evil body of individuals, no matter what that organization is, I can almost guarantee you that it's somewhat law or ordinance-based. And if you don't get that addressed and overturned, you're going to continue to have a difficult time.
Okay. Final words, Carl Mitchell.
Oh, yeah. Like I was going to say that, you know, that is a clinch. The American people really don't care if they want to do away with Obamacare. The thing is here, we don't have coverage. I mean, you have to come up with some type of plan. If you're saying that you want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, fine and dandy. But here we are 6 million strong in Texas alone without health insurance coverage, and you're telling us that all along you're saying, well, we can take care of our own. That's what Ted Cruz said at a rally one night, well, we can take care of our own. Well, why can we not already take care of our lady said, go to Mexico, you should get some insurance. You know, he said, well, we can take
care.
What did you say about that? So I don't know, you know, where the head is at on that, but that, you know, that is a clinch. But I'm just glad that the president is holding firm and that he's not going to let them hold the country hostage. Mitch McConnell said that won't happen again. Of course, you know, Mitch is up for re-election, so he'll say anything in order to win points as long as the election has not taken place yet. And so if he's voted back in, I'm sure his speech is going to change, and then we're going to have another hostage crisis throughout the first of the year. And it's going to happen around income tax time. So, you know, I'm just hoping that Obama holds firm.
Okay. Carrie Ann, final word.
I just have to just hammer it home again about overcoming the apathy. You know, it's like you go to a dance and got really good music playing and nobody wants to go dancing. And then finally one person gets out there and they start shaking their booty. And then next thing you know, everybody's dancing. But in this case, it's worse than that. Like there's no music. And there's no one to put the music on. And I'm just saying that to say, you know, we as people who are being affected by it can make all the difference in the world if we just keep having these conversations and report back. I mean, after we engage and discuss, we got to report back to the people that we are voting for and sending up on the Hill. We've got to get involved and stay involved. And then after that, you know, stand beside each other and keep staying involved. And not having family units in our country as much as we need to. Families are so torn, and so many families are in the poverty, you know, and they're not seeing the results of what you can get when you do show up, when you do vote, when you do get involved. And they're just worn down. So I just think that it's really, if there was ever a time in our lives where we could say, you know what, now is the time to get involved, that's something positive that could come from this shutdown, because we've all seen what the fallout is and the collateral damage just everywhere. And I think, you know, it's a good time. Maybe we can get people more motivated and keep talking about the results so we can keep making a difference.
Christopher Bond, final words.
The former governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney, had a state health care plan, which is dissimilar to the Obamacare. It worked then, and I believe that President Obama's health care initiative will work as well.
Wow. Well, that's going to have
awesome.
To be the final word, y'all. Listen, I'd like to say thank you to my guests, Carrie Ann Light, Carl Mitchell, and Major Christopher Bond. That the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, a reminder, y'all, we do this each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Come join us. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a coworker to check out the show. Also, we'd like to hear from you. Drop us a line at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. That's centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Tell us what you think of the show. Tell us what type of topics you'd like us to discuss here on Center Stage. We will definitely look at it and consider it and see if it's something that we feel is appropriate for our audience. So, again, I'd like to say thank you to my guest, Carrie Ann Light, Major Christopher Bonds, and Carl Mitchell. I'd like to say thank you to the audience for listening. Listen, we got to get out of here, make way for somebody else to do what we do. But we'll see you right here next week, same time, same bat channel. Good night, everyone. Bye-bye.